Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 22nd day of January, Anno Domini 2022. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. In a shocking turn of events.
Here comes the news.
Exactly.
Shocking.
Shocking. On Monday, Microsoft published an out-of-band update for several versions of Windows 10 and Windows 11 to address some problems that were reported after installing the January cumulative updates. This emergency update fixes the following issues. Windows Server's domain controllers might restart unexpectedly. This one won't really affect most home users, but can be seriously problematic for admins and companies. Certain IPsec connections might fail. IPsec is IP security. And again, most home users won't be affected unless they use a VPN. Many of those simply stopped working. Virtual machines, VMs, in Hyper-V might fail to start. This is another one that won't necessarily affect home users, except those who like to play with other operating systems in their copious spare time. And ReFS formatted removable media may fail to mount. ReFS, the resilient file system, was introduced by Microsoft back in 2012, heralded as the replacement for NTFS. While it seems that these patches mostly apply to corporations, lots of home users, particularly the higher-end users, will find themselves hit by these problems. The big hit is to people who use VPNs, which is a pretty big pool, particularly during these trying times. Monthly patches to patch the previous month's patches seem to be becoming the norm more than a rarity. This is why so many admins and home users wait to install the monthly patches. If you're someone who has paused patching, you might want to wait another week just to see if Microsoft has to patch the patches to the patches. It wouldn't be the first time. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft released patches for the patches again. And your choices are, I expected it, I'm flabbergasted, Windows, no thanks, and others. So far we have 23 votes. Windows, no thanks, is far in the lead, but behind it is I expected it. If you said other, or if you have more to say about this, and I know you people, head on over to our forums at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff. You'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 22 Jan 22. Microsoft releases patches for the patches. Again. And then, of course, you can join us here by giving us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. If you're on the line, stay on the line. We'll get to you in just a couple of minutes.
It's a good thing Windows 10 is the most secure Windows ever.
11.
Well, they said that when Windows 10 came out.
Yes, they did.
Too. Now Windows 10 is the most
secure.
It was
true at the
Windows
time, and it didn't say it was secure.
Yeah.
It was the most secure
Windows
up to that time.
Ever, yeah.
I think the best one ever came out, though, was Windows 7. They didn't have, you know, all the patches and everything else right out of the box. It was pretty stable.
It was pretty stable.
They didn't have to do SP1 and SP2 and then this patch and that patch. It came out and it was pretty rock solid.
That's why they abandoned it as quickly as they could and came out with the great Windows 8.
Yeah.
If you had a tablet touch screen, it was Windows 8 was fine.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. But yeah, Look,
one instance where Microsoft was too early with a product. That's shocking.
That is shocking.
Before their time, they got it actually right once.
Now touch tablets are common.
They were lucky.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, they should come out with Windows 8 now that touch tablets are common. Just call it retro Windows 8. Yeah.
Retro Windows 8, exactly. If you're one of those people who does wait, has paused updates, don't unpause them yet. Let's wait another week or so before we make that decision.
At least.
But in the meantime, we will go to the phones. Our first caller is unknown to me. That's the tab I want. Dan from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Dan. What's up?
Hey, how you doing today?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, I'm good. Good. Two questions. First is that I need a good program that can extract SMS and iMessages from an iPhone, including the date and timestamps, that can put them on either a PC or preferably a Mac or a PC. It doesn't matter. But preferably could run on both platforms.
There's a couple of them I've used, iExplorer and AnyTrans. They both have free trial versions that will see if it can get to the data before you have to pay to get all the data, which is handy. So sometimes it's nice to try two or three of them and see which one is going to get more of the data you want before you actually pay for it. Extracting text messages can be tricky. If you turn on messages in the cloud, then it will sync all your messages to iCloud, so those messages will then sync to a new device as well. But that's only for new messages, not old messages.
Okay. Yeah, I got to get all the messages from one phone number or one sender.
Yeah. Most of the programs like iExplorer and AnyTrans are sort of designed as a supplement or a replacement for iTunes. So typically iTunes is used to sync data between the computer and the device, but it's limited on what data it will sync. And so these third-party programs will grab more data. In addition to just photos and music, it will also grab your messages and your contacts and your voicemails and things like that.
Great. Do you have any preference over AnyTrans or iExplorer?
I use them both back and forth, depending on which one can get the data I'm looking for.
Okay.
And they both have free trials. It's this typical, download it for free. Okay. And then the first time you run it, it's, you need to pay for this if you want to actually extract any data.
But you can download it for free.
You can download it for free. So they technically didn't lie.
I'm down that rabbit hole, and I see that, I can get like 25 messages or,
But at least it's nice to tell if it's going to work. And it also really helps if the device is not locked and you have the passcode for the device, because that's one of those things where if you don't have the passcode, you can't get to the data, not even your own device. If you forget the passcode for your own device, you cannot get to the data. That's how it's designed.
Right.
Ooh. Good to know. Second question. I have a brand new PC and an older Windows 10 PC, and I'd like an easy way to transfer the data from the old machine to the new one.
Well, Microsoft stopped including the files settings and transfer wizard.
Yeah.
There are tutorials online where you can download the Windows 7 version. It still works fine on Windows 10. Microsoft recommends going to Laplink, which is a long time.
Oh, that's
program.
Been around for decades.
Yeah, and there is a. I'll see if I can find the link. There is a discount from Microsoft if you purchase it. It's called PC Mover now. Oh, and they've updated it for Windows 11. To be able to move all your data from your old computer to your new computer. Now, why isn't that built in? It is on the Mac. It is on the iDevices. It is on Chrome.
Right.
Windows
right.
is the only... Well, why would you ever get a new computer? I want a new computer.
Well, that's right up there with when I asked the question, why did Windows do away with Workgroup?
Right.
Yep.
It's been in there since day one.
It was stale.
So are they.
Yeah. But yeah, those that program will work. What's it called now?
It's a PC Mover from Laplink.
Yeah, back in the day,
Laplink used to come with a parallel cable.
It used to come with both parallel or serial.
And a little box in the middle that was basically a computer to read from
blue,
one and write to the other.
It was a blue or a yellow cable. Blue, I think, was for parallel. Serial was for
yellow. One of the two.
One or the other. But yeah, you got them both. Depending on what your device had, and you sit there and hook it up, and it pop out and see the other computer, and you can move them.
Okay.
The long way around it is to back up on one machine and restore on the other machine.
Right.
Will that work if you have the Windows 10 backup and you restore it on?
No.
What are you trying to do? Just back up data?
Well, copy to a new machine.
Yeah, copy to a new machine.
Yeah, well, the data, I mean, like you said, you could always just...
manually copy it, yeah.
Yeah, move it physically, you know, copy it from one to the other. I mean, it takes a while.
You may have to use a hard drive intermediate to copy
it. Well, if he's got a network...
Or a thumb drive.
Or a thumb drive, yeah, or through the network.
Yeah, if he's got his own network.
Depends on how much data there is, if it will fit on a thumb drive versus a full hard drive.
Right. But if they will both connect to the network and you can see one from the other, which is your problem.
Yeah, sure. No, I got that solved, didn't
I? Oh, good.
For the most part.
Yeah.
Not totally.
But if you can do that, then you can just transfer it over the network, just move all your data.
Yeah, it's slow.
And yeah, that'll be, well, it depends on how fast your network is and how fast your machines are. But it also is essentially just start it and walk away.
Yeah.
Then you'll get an error message.
If you stare at it for the whole 5 hours, it'll work fine.
It'll work fine. Been there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I am getting... I'm trying to back it up to an external hard drive, and I'm getting some errors that the length of the...
path length.
Yeah, path length being too long.
Yeah, it's nice that they allow you 256 characters in a file name, but there's only, 256 characters for the entire path?
And the file name.
So if you have a long folder inside a long folder inside a long folder inside a long folder, it doesn't work. One of the things I have found is if you turn on Invisibles and skip the application support folder or the local items folder, one of those invisible folders, that's where all of those stupid long file names are. And the rest of your documents are and documents and photos and things are in the regular documents and photos folder.
So say that again. What do I turn off or turn on?
Turn on invisible files. And there's a invisible folder called application support, which is temp files and stuff that you can usually skip.
Okay. Well, thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate all the good answers.
Thank you, Dan. Have fun.
Yep.
Sometimes the trick with invisible folders is that they're invisible for a reason.
Yeah.
So you really need to know what you're doing when you make them uninvisible. But if you make them visible so you cannot copy them,
that would help.
Yeah. So like if you copy your entire user folder, it copies all those invisible folders too. If you go into the user folder and just drag documents is probably okay. Just drag pictures is probably okay.
Yeah.
But if you try to drag the entire documents folder, then you'll get all those invisibles.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry, what's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I am in real trouble today.
Uh-oh.
I just purchased a new HP laptop for my wife. She does not want an Apple computer. And I did the new install with Win 11. But somehow along the way with Microsoft asking me some details for Win 11, it looks like the laptop is now more my machine than it is hers. As a matter of fact, it's completely disabled her old email. And even though I can see the email address and everything, I can't seem to download any of her emails since 1/13 when I tried to do the install. So I guess my real question is, should I flatten the machine and just do a Win11 install with no data? I use PC Mover to move transfer old programs from the old HP 2000 to the new one. So I'm wondering if I should just put Win11 on it and go one app at a time and try to get this machine back so that it really is her PC and not mine. It's even got stuff from me from Gmail on it, which, you know, I don't want on it.
Yeah. What probably happened is you logged in with your Microsoft account,
mm-hmm.
and it copied all of your settings thinking it was your computer.
Right.
So, yeah, probably the easiest thing at this point would be to erase it and start over.
Yeah, start over with hers.
With her Microsoft information. Account. And actually, if there's a little tiny button that's hard to see that creates a local user so you don't have to log in with a Microsoft account. That can be advantageous. Then you don't have to have internet connection to be able to log into your account. But then by using a Microsoft account, if you forget your password, you can go onto a website and reset your password. If you're using a local account and forget your password, it's very difficult to get it back.
Okay.
But in this particular case, your best bet is to start from the beginning and use your wife's information.
Okay, got it. I thought it might be that after pulling my hair out, but I wasn't sure. So I figured before I got started today, I would call into the show and see if that was the best route to take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a best bet.
I will do that and just put her information in. I hate this. It was so easy when I just purchased a new Mac from Dennis' shop the other day. I just moved it. I had to buy PC Mover. Why isn't that there?
It's Windows. Yeah, we were just complaining about that. It's Windows. They apparently don't expect you to buy a new computer. Or, the joke is, it's a fine third-party opportunity.
Yeah, right.
Because Microsoft used to have a program built into Windows 7 that did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, the other thing, too, is PC Mover, it seems it says one time. Now, I'm trying to figure out what that means. It does the move one time, and then you have to buy it again?
Or a one-time payment. Let me dig into that website a little more.
Yeah, it's still a little obscure on the website exactly what it means, but I'm going to, I guess, I don't know. I'm going to flatten it, put Win11, then I'll figure out do I want to put stuff on it, onesie, twosie.
Yeah, go, because it is Windows 11.
It's going to be different anyway.
Okay.
Good luck.
I guess I got all the information I was looking for, guys. Thank
all
you.
Right. All right, good luck, Larry.
Bye-bye.
There is an enterprise version that's designed for companies to be able to clone multiple computers quickly, like companies often do.
But there's also PC Mover Express, which is free. Nope, $30. Well, you know, if you're a business, then pay the $30 and shut up.
Yeah.
But if you're an individual and you're really doing this one time in your life,
mm-hmm.
even $30, it's not a lot of money, but it's annoying.
Yeah.
I get it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Afternoon, guys. You're really talking about backing up, and I'm glad that you got that call. Something happened. I have an Android phone, and I thought that, listen to you guys over the years, that the presumption was that you were automatically backed up to the cloud, like pictures. That's more than anything else you're concerned with. So I get these recent questions when I go in to check my data. I said, do you want your data backed up? And I thought, geez, well, what the heck? No. I said, not now, thank you. So just for the heck of it, I clicked on it. And that Google has this apparently procedure that shows you which things are backed up, but things which are not, like your calls and your SMS messages and, you know, things like that I don't care about anyway. But anyway, my question is, are things backed up or not? Are they trying a different approach to get some more money out of it?
They are backed up if you tell them to.
Right. So what you want to do is, if you're interested in your photos, for example, go to photos.google.com. If you're already signed in to Google, you'll be there. If not, you'll have to sign in and see if your photos are there. If they are, then they are automatically backing up.
At some point, you said, yes, back up my photos.
Right. If they are not, then you need to go into your phone and tell it to back up your photos.
Right. Is this something new that they just started? I thought everything was automatic. Because the reason I'm asking, usually I don't use Wi-Fi. I just use my mobile data. But it'll say specific that after two hours, if you're on Wi-Fi, it'll automatically back it up. I don't use Wi-Fi, so then what do I do in that case?
Most phones will not back up over cellular, so they don't run up your cell bill. So they expect you to be connected to Wi-Fi. They also generally expect you to be connected to power so that it doesn't drain your battery. So it's typically at night when you're at home connected to Wi-Fi and power charging the phone is when your phone backs up. And if you never connect to Wi-Fi, then it may never back up.
Well, right, exactly. And that's going to be my third question was, would it do it if I always use the mobile not a hotspot, but the mobile data? If I do what it says to do by clicking on, yes, do you want to make an account, backup, et cetera, et cetera. Is that going to compromise anything that I have right now?
What do you mean by compromise?
Well, why would it, if the presumption is that when you use Android and you're backed up to the cloud anyway, why all of a sudden do they come out with this new approach, do you want to back up? I thought they were doing
They always ask you if you want to back up, and you can say yes or you can say no. That's always been your choice.
Right. What you want to do is, on your phone, go into Google Photos and look at the settings. Under settings, you will see backup and sync. Down toward the bottom, it'll tell you how much storage you're using and whether backup and sync is on or off. If it's off, turn it on. Then down underneath all of that, you can say whether or not you want to use your cell phone, your cell data to back up or not.
Right. Yeah, that's what's confusing because I did that some time back and I don't know what they're doing. Okay, I appreciate it. We'll give it a shot.
Thanks. All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 30 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Mike.
Before you go to the phone, to the previous caller, you may have set this back up in the past, but it's common these days on all platforms to ask you for the password again and to make sure you really want to do it after time, especially if you're using your cellular data to do your backups, because most people pay by the gig for cellular. So if your backup is costing you money, you may want to wait till you get to Wi-Fi. That's typically why phones won't back up over cellular. They wait for Wi-Fi.
Also, if you do turn on cellular on your phone, it doesn't turn off. If you turn on Wi-Fi on your phone, it doesn't turn off cellular. So, for example, when I'm at home, I have my cellular connection, but I also have my Wi-Fi connection, which is faster, and my phone uses that instead. But when I go somewhere else, if I have not actively connected to their Wi-Fi network, I am using my cell data.
Mm-hmm.
So you can use both. And again, if you're not unlimited data for cellular, then using your Wi-Fi saves you a lot of money.
Yeah.
And even with unlimited data, most of the time that means unlimited gigabytes. But after you use 2 or 3 gigs, it slows you way down below dial-up speeds.
Right.
Yeah.
So even if it's unlimited, it's still kind of slow.
And so many places are offering free Wi-Fi.
Right.
I mean, you know, most coffee shops, restaurants, and anything else, you go there and they got free Wi-Fi.
Go have a cup. Yeah, go buy a cup of coffee and a donut and back up your phone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Batavia, New York. Hiya, Mike. What's up?
Hi there. Well, first question, are those Paul's donuts? They look delicious.
They're Ridge donuts, actually. They're very, very good.
That is the best donut shop in all of Rochester.
Paul's makes good donuts. Let's not deny that. Absolutely. Hmm? Great donuts.
Oh, yeah. But, well, I was going to ask whether they had a shop in Rochester. I didn't know that. Obviously, they don't. That's it. Well, my question is, I bought a new monitor, and it has something new to me, probably not new to anybody else. It has a display port, okay? And but I've got one, is DisplayPort like the future? Is it going to be around for a long time? And the other one is my video card will not support it. It will support HDMI, but it does not have to support DisplayPort.
Yeah, actually, DisplayPort is old. DisplayPort was after VGA to be a digital connection for computers. But in the meantime, televisions switched to HDMI. Right. And computer monitors decided, oh, okay, a TV and a computer monitor is so close together, we'll just use HDMI anyway. And so HDMI is the future and the current and the recent past.
Right.
There are adapters you can get since DisplayPort is the digital connection. There are DisplayPort to HDMI adapters that will work with the HDMI monitors. There's also DisplayPort to DVI. And depending on which DisplayPort it is, you can often get DisplayPort to VGA as well.
But in your case, if you've got an HDMI port in that TV, in that monitor, just use that. It's a better connection.
Yeah.
It's a faster connection.
Yeah, some computers will have both a DisplayPort and HDMI. Right. Oftentimes, there's those crossover computers that have the old port and the new port.
What's on the back of your computer? What does your computer support?
Well, that's the thing. It's an old NVIDIA with a 59-pin, so I can decide with the dongle what it goes to.
Right.
And I have HDMI, I've got DVI.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I do, this is the technical question part of it. I have PCI Express 2.0. Now, according to Tom's Hardware, it is both forward and backward compatible. Okay, that I can put a PCI 3.0 card in there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It won't work as fast as it should, but it will work.
It will work, yeah, like you said, but maybe not the, it's just like USB 2 versus 3. You can put a 3 plug in a 2, but it won't work as fast, change it to a 3.
Right. It only works as fast as a 2.
Okay. Well, thank you. This is the big thing. Okay, thank you very much.
Yep. All right, good luck. Have fun.
Yeah, actually, I think DisplayPort was after DVI because it also includes audio, if I remember right.
Right.
Where HDMI also includes audio. So in the olden days with VGA and DVI, you had one cable for video and a second cable for audio if your monitor had speakers in it.
In general, if you have a choice, pick HDMI.
Yeah.
Then
we get into HDMI 2 versus 3 versus 3.1.
Get out.
Versus 4K.
Just get out. Get out right now.
4K 30 versus 4K 60. 4K 30 is cheaper. 4K 60 is better quality.
Right.
And that's the difference between a $300 monitor and a $1,000 monitor.
Would that be Brian from Pavilion? Okay. Our next caller is Brian from Pavilion, New York. Hi, Brian. What's up?
Gentlemen.
Nope. You got us instead.
Oh, damn. Greetings from the gateway to New York's tremendous southern tier.
The gateway to the southern tier. I like it.
Well, it is, and it's the very first, like, part of the section of the 390. You can actually start seeing how beautiful this area really is.
Yeah, it is, too.
It is, too, man. But anyway, kind of painted myself into a bit of a corner last week. I was looking for an alternate to a website developer program that I've been using for years, which is running on my ancient Windows machines. I've currently migrated almost completely to Linux. So I was looking for an alternative so I can get rid of the last vestige of this Windows nonsense. I accidentally went to WordPress.com instead of WordPress.org.
Oh, yeah.
And I've just caused myself no end of troubles this week with my several domains that I have. They have effectively hijacked the authenticity. I gave them no permissions, no common login information, no common passwords. And somehow or another, they have snuck some malware somewhere into this last 7 machine, which I... like I said, I'm trying to get rid of. So I've been working with my server and my server people. I don't use any of the popular services.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit there. One of the problems with WordPress, it's a wonderful tool. It can do a zillion things, but because it's so popular, it's a huge target for attacks.
Right.
And just like every week or two, there's another attack that allows bad guys to inject things into your WordPress site. And if you're running your own site, you need to keep running the updates yourself. If you're using a WordPress hosted service, the hosting company will run the updates for you.
Right.
No, I went into. I logged on, did a straight FTP, went and logged in there, and gutted the entire. It just deleted the entire file structure.
Right.
And I wiped it clean. Every other day, it's putting in the I wrote it down. I left the paper. It's well known / common Acme. It comes. Google does not like it.
No. Okay. So. If you go to WordPress, now I'm assuming you now are installing WordPress.org, not .com.
I'm not even messing with it. I got rid of all of it, and I'm so aggravated with all of it that I'm not even going to touch any of these people, to be honest with you. So, and I couldn't log back on to the information that the account I set up, or, you know, the account I set up with WordPress.com, now no longer lets me log on. It won't let me go in there to delete anything off of their server, or, you know, any information that I may have given them, which was minimal. It won't even allow me in. I ask for a password reset. Okay, it won't send it to me.
Wow.
Yeah, I got it.
WordPress.com, or did you get caught sidetracked by another site?
I may very well have been sidetracked. Well, of course, you don't know that until you know that, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I was wondering, I scanned my computers, this last Windows 7 machine, which is going into junk immediately after I resolved this issue. And it's not coming up with any malware. I haven't done the Tango yet formally, which I may have to do. But I cannot find any malware on my machine that's maybe hijacking my passwords. And by the way, I had changed my passwords twice with my DNS, with my domain name server.
Right.
I've changed those passwords twice, and every time I change it, it still finds a way to get in there.
Okay, so one of the things that you need to look for is on Windows, I'm assuming your server is Linux?
It is.
Okay. On Linux, just like on Windows, you can have hidden folders.
Right.
And so you want to look for those. They usually start with a period.
Okay.
They're dot something. Look for those and check inside all of them to see if there are some programs that may be running without your permission. If something snuck into your machine, I will guarantee you it's in a hidden folder.
Could also be a rootkit.
It could. Well, that's unlikely. It depends on the server that he's running.
Mm-hmm.
That is on who's ever running that server.
Yeah.
The company that's running the server. But in general, what you want to do is go in and take a look at all of your. If you do an ls-a, you will see all the files, including the hidden ones.
Okay, I'll go backtrack and listen to this on the archive and do it.
Right. So what you want to do is say ls-a. So let's say there's one called .hello. You would say cd space .hello, and that will get you into that folder.
Hello.
You can't just say hello. You have to say dot hello. And that will get you into that folder. And you should then, again, ls-a with a space between ls space dash a for all. And then you will see what's in that folder and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It could take a lot of work to clear it all out. But if you find some stuff that's suspicious, then that's probably where it's going to be hiding.
Yeah, and if he wipes it directory and it comes back again, it's that sounds more like a rootkit.
It does sound like a rootkit, and if it is, then he has to talk to whoever is running that server.
Yeah,
because that can only be fixed by them.
But if you can't log in, then there's
I was working with them. They have one guy. He's level 3 support. I had a bit of.
You dropped out there, Brian. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Is that better?
Nope, you're dropping out.
Oh, okay. Let me move over here real quick. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I'm in a bit, so.
Nope. I think he's.
Oh, okay.
I think he's gone.
Very good.
I can't hear him.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry, man.
Sorry.
I'll call you back in a little different spot.
Okay, good. Thanks. Yeah. Bye. Sorry. You're just, when you're dropping in and out like that, there's...
Yeah, catching every other word.
So yeah.
But yeah, but it's tough. It's running your own server is the safest because you control it. You load all the patches.
Right.
It's also the most difficult to do.
You have to be a real systems administrator and not just a part-time one. You check every day. You check multiple times a day.
And even you use a hosting service.
And even I use a hosting service. I don't want to have to deal with that anymore. I call them and say, this has happened, so fix it.
Yeah.
And they do.
I remember the olden days when we did everything ourselves.
And those weren't bad days.
Yeah.
But it's just there's so much to do now.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ray from Rochester, New York. Hi, Ray. What's up?
Hi, Nick. How are you doing?
Peachy. How are you?
All right. I bought a new Acer Nitro gaming laptop back in December. I'm having an issue with the battery. I think it has a lithium-ion battery that's rated at either, 48 or 55 watt-hours, depending on who you ask. But the issue is the computer often won't come out of sleep mode when it's on battery power. I've looked online for some answers, like in the Acer user forums, but nothing I've tried has worked. I wondered if you had any ideas.
No, I'm sorry. I wish I did. If you put it into hibernation instead of sleep mode, does it work?
I haven't tried that.
Try that. Windows is quirky.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
I don't even think it has a hibernation mode. When I click on the start button, I see sleep, shut down, and restart are the only options.
No, in the power settings for Windows itself.
Yeah. Oh.
if you are talking about, usually you sleep or hibernate when you just close the lid.
Okay.
So check, that's where you check, that's, hi, that's in the power settings. When you close the lid, what happens?
Yeah, sleep, usually it's a drop down. It's a drop down menu, you can sit there and say, sleep, hibernate, or they give you a list of times that you can delay before anything is going to do anything. You can go right down to say do nothing.
Hibernate is basically a deep sleep where it writes the contents of RAM to disk and then uses even less power while it's hibernating.
That is safer
but it also takes longer to wake up. It
takes longer to wake up. Mm-hmm. Not that much longer. I mean, look, I get it. Instant gratification is no longer fast enough. But the reality is that, I shut my Chromebook down all the time. It takes 8 seconds to boot up. If I can't wait 8 seconds, shame on me. I'm sorry.
The other thing to check is in your BIOS and make sure that the BIOS power management settings are set to allow Windows to control. Because sometimes the BIOS settings will be, never sleep. And then when Windows puts it to sleep, the BIOS says, I don't know what's going on. I'm just going to die.
Right.
Huh. That might be above my competency level. I'm not even sure where the BIOS are. I've been using your Chromebook for as long as they've been out, and this is the first Windows computer I've had in over 10 years, so I'm kind of rusty with Windows.
Right. But do check in the power settings. That's under settings. You can go to power.
Well, I'm looking at system power and battery right now and has power. There's a screen and sleep thing, and I clicked on that. It's got on power, turn off my computer after my screen after when plugged in, turn off my screen after on battery power, put my device to sleep after.
Right.
But I don't see anything about hibernation anywhere.
It's not on a screen. It's under power.
Archand is saying that maybe Windows 10 doesn't have a hibernate anymore.
Really? Well, harumph.
Yeah.
So, all right. Yeah.
We'll take a look here.
This is Windows 11. Did I say Windows?
Well, that's the other problem, too.
That's a whole different.
Yeah, we got to start asking people now because Windows 10 has been out for 10 years now.
Right.
Yeah, I miss Windows 7, too.
You can add the Hibernate option back in Windows 10, but let me add Windows 11 to my search and see if it's different.
All right, listen, we got to take a break. Hold on.
No.
Don't hold on.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it was early.
Wrong button.
We
got 7 minutes left.
Look, it's Dave. We just make allowances.
Yeah, it's only 7:50.
My hands didn't touch it. I was over here trying to go.
He's
got Windows 11 on this machine, and I was going to go in there. And I must have hit a hotkey combination.
Yeah.
Why would he upgrade Windows 11 on a mission critical radio station computer?
We don't even work.
It was probably automatic. He didn't even know it happened.
You can manage. Yeah, there are power options in Windows 11, but I don't know. That's a good question.
Can I do a search to find Hibernate?
Yeah, there is a way to.
All right, there is power options. If you go into, let's see, if I go to balance,
custom probably.
Yeah, no, he's right. It just has never or times to turn off the display. Put the computer in sleep mode, and all you've got is times.
If you go into the control panel under system and security, under power options, under change what the buttons do, under change the settings. Geez, I posted a link on our website.
Yeah, it doesn't have the Hibernate anymore, times.
You can add Hibernate to the menu.
Okay, I'll check that out. Where on your site is that?
Right now it'll be the first link.
The first link, okay.
Well, the first non-permanent link.
All right.
So what's that, like the third link down?
Refresh the page here.
Yeah.
Is that under recent posts?
Should be right in the center of the screen. It's the third one down now, behind the backups and Soundbites Lounge.
Oh, yeah. All right. Thanks a lot.
All righty.
Okay, take care now. Bye.
Yep, have fun. There's also...
I also posted a link on WordPress.com versus WordPress.org, so you know what's what.
I want to know what keystrokes I hit.
Okay.
Right.
Well, that's the problem. We've got three separate computers here, and I don't always remember which keyboard goes with what screen. Because folks have to understand, I've got four screens here and three systems. And I hit some key combination.
Yeah, just don't touch it ever again.
Well, it's just like the misfiring when we had the start of the show there.
Right.
So, what the
heck? You didn't do it. So, yeah, there is a place in Windows 11 where you can...
And
10, but we're talking about 11. So it's under the control panel, under hardware and sound, under power options, under choose what closing the lid does.
And normally closing the lid will put it to sleep because you don't need to use it anymore.
Right.
If you're using an external keyboard and mouse, one of the common things people will do is close the lid and push the computer out of the way and then just use the big external monitor.
Right. And in there, you can also select what shows up in the shutdown settings, sleep, hibernate, do nothing, or rather lock, excuse me.
Yeah.
In general, if you're going to put your machine away for a while, my recommendation is always that you turn it off because that's safest. It's certainly with a new machine, it's not as big a deal. But as machines get older, their batteries get weaker. You don't want to be
stressing it out.
Right.
We've had several people over the years bring in computers where they closed the lid and it didn't go to sleep. So it was still on and running. Then they put it in their backpack and all that heat just accumulated and all the plastic keys melted off of their computer.
Yep. So turning it off is the best option. Yes, particularly with Windows, it can take for stinking ever to start up
I don't want to do updates. Just shut down, darn it.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. But you really can do some damage to your machine if you're not careful with a laptop on how you manage it. I tend to leave mine off. Back when I was teaching, I would be setting stuff up in my office, and then, close the lid, which just puts it to sleep, take it in a class, open it up, and it starts up. But that's like a three-minute walk.
Well, the other thing that's tricky is if you have external hard drives plugged in and you close the lid and unplug the drives and walk away.
That's a bad thing.
Bad thing for the drive. When you open the computer again, you'll probably get messages about this drive is disconnected properly.
Yeah, it doesn't. It'll let you know it's very upset with you. Yeah.
Right. But generally, I turn my machine off. And yes, it can take well, with Windows, again, we've talked about this many times. It depends on how big your registry is. If you have used Revo on installer and pared your registry down to the minimum, it shortens considerably the time that your system can start up. But even so, Windows takes time to start up. On the other hand, it's safer to let it do that.
Well, plus, if it's not an SSD hard drive,
right,
you could damage your hard drive by just quick unplugging it and going off.
Even SSDs are damaged because sometimes it doesn't flush the cache.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't park the heads.
So that safely eject hardware. Flash drives are notorious for this because flash drives are generally slow, which is weird because SSDs are NAND flash memory.
Right.
But flash drives apparently are god-awful slow NAND flash memory.
Yes, they are.
So that safely eject hardware will flush the cache, make sure all the data is written, and then get the drive ready to be unplugged.
Because one of the things Microsoft did to make Windows faster is write stuff in the background.
Yep.
And so when you say write this and it says, okay, I did, it may not have. All right, we are done with our first hour, but despair not. For shortly... my Nostradamus hat is now on. Shortly, there will be another hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. You can give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. We're going to take a quick little bio break, but we'll be back on the other side with more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites. On member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 9 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And before we go to the phones, I'll read a little news item here. A serious Safari bug can disclose information about your recent browsing history and even some info of your logged-in Google account. A bug in Safari's indexed DB implementation on macOS and iOS means that a website can see the names of databases for any domain, not just its own. The database names can then be used to extract identifying information from a lookup table. For instance, Google Services stores an indexed DB instance of each of your logged-in accounts with the name of the database corresponding to your Google user ID. And it's not just Google. We're just using Google as an example. Almost all of them do this. A nefarious site could scrape your Google user ID and then use that ID to find out other personal information about you, as the ID is used to make API requests to Google services. Almost any website that uses the IndexedDB JavaScript API could be vulnerable to such data scraping. The bug is simply that the names of all IndexedDB databases is available on any site. The fix and the correct behavior observed by other browsers, like Chrome, would be that a website can only see the databases created by the same domain name as its owner. All current versions of Safari on iPhone, iPad, and Mac are exploitable. Fingerprint.js says they've reported the bug to Apple on November 28th, but it has not yet been resolved. Are you using Safari on Mac or on macOS or iOS? Give us a call, 585 866-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
I wonder if that's the update that came out last week.
Mm-hmm. Well, they said no, not yet.
Well, yeah, what was your story dated?
Yesterday.
Yesterday, okay. There's actually an interesting growing criticism in the bug finder community that Apple doesn't respond fast enough for them. You know, Google fixes patches in a couple of days.
Right.
Microsoft might be years.
Right.
But Apple is 6 to 8 months, and that's still too long.
That's a very long time.
And especially without acknowledging them when they said,
right,
when they do find a bug.
Right. I prefer the couple of days fix myself, yeah, personally. Linux is the same way. Linux, usually within 24 hours, you'll get an update for whatever program. But yeah. Okay.
One of the tricks, and probably one of the problems, is because the web browsers are now so integrated into the OS that you make a fix to this, and what are you going to break elsewhere?
No, and I get that, yeah, but so what? That's their job.
Yeah.
Sorry, don't integrate it then.
Apparently there's an interesting shortage of engineers because Apple hires a bunch of good ones, and then Google poaches them away, and then Microsoft poaches them away. And so that's like, there's like the same 100 engineers that are really good that just keep moving around between.
I had a friend who for decades went between Fairchild Electric and, mm-hmm, was it Intel? TI. TI and Fairchild. They hired him back and forth. Every year, he would go to the other company for a substantial raise.
Yeah,
you know, at the end he was making just obscene money. Good for him.
A couple of years ago, there was a 2015. Apple, Google, and a bunch of other companies got sued for an anti-poaching agreement they all had among themselves, and so they had to pay $415 million and agree not to have anti-poaching.
Nice.
So if you don't know, in fact, there's a whole big thing now, and is you should discuss your salary with your coworkers.
Wait a minute. Who got the $415 million?
The court.
Not me.
The court did.
The court did.
Yeah,
the lawyers. Who do you think got it?
Let's see. So it was probably one of those where each person involved got 38 cents or something like that. There's this big push lately from employees that employees should discuss salary with their coworkers. And you shouldn't let your boss underpay you.
Right.
And bosses don't like that, because if they can hire the new person at a lower pay to do a better job, then they will.
Right, of course. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jerry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Jerry?
Hi, guys. Just a question. Last week you mentioned something about non-360 virus protection. I just heard the tail end of it. And I guess there's some issue with that, if I'm not mistaken.
Norton got caught installing a crypto miner in your computer so it can mine cryptocurrency for themselves, and will give you a 15% cut. So that's okay then, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The problem is crypto miners really slow down your computer.
Mm-hmm.
And why is
and heat it up, and it's just horrible.
Waste electricity. And so why is a security company installing a crypto miner? They're supposed to stop malicious crypto miners from getting installed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Can you find that on the computer if you've got it downloaded or something? Or
you can uninstall Norton 360.
Oh, you have to do the whole thing then. Oh.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
because they buried in there, so it can't be attacked.
Yeah. So I guess one of the solutions is not to have Norton 360 anymore. Switch to another virus protector or something.
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
Check out McAfee.
McAfee, okay. One other quick question, too. If you plug your laptop into your battery charger constantly, is that damaging at all, or is it something that's recommended or not recommended?
Depends on the computer and the battery.
Mm-hmm.
The better brand computers will have a power management circuit that will stop the battery from getting overcharged. Some of the off-brand ones may not.
Or creating dead spots.
Yeah. In fact, we've seen on the Apple and on Lenovo even, that if you leave your computer plugged in all the time, it will stop charging the battery. It will learn your habits. And so only, you know, Saturdays when I take my computer on the road, it Friday night it will charge it up because it knows Saturday you need it on battery. And so we're starting to see more smart battery management where it'll keep your battery about half charge because you don't want to get too low and you don't want to get too high.
You want to really be between 40 and 80% most of the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then when you do need to use it on battery for a long duration, it will charge itself up to 100%. But that depends on the brand of computer you've got.
Right.
And it's usually in the power management settings or what does Apple call it? I guess just power management. I forget what they have a special name for it.
But yeah, they're also, for example, on my phone, I have a little app that alerts me when I hit 40% and alerts me when I hit 80% when I'm charging so that I can stay between 40 and 80% most of the time.
Mm-hmm. And especially with the lithium ion batteries that are most commonly used now, that's where you don't want to overcharge them or run them too low.
Right.
Yeah. I just so happen to have a recent Lenovo laptop, so I better check that one out, I think.
Probably.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Yeah. A lot of a lot of times you can get a utility if it's not built into your OS to show you your battery health. What's interesting is they consider 80% to be 80% full charge capacity to be the margin for it's time to replace your battery. Generally, it's with the Apple batteries, they're rated for about 1,000 recharge cycles at 80% full charge capacity.
Right.
And when you get below 80% capacity, then your battery duration is a lot lower. May not last as long as it did when it was new.
Exactly right.
And so that's typically when Apple will allow a warranty battery replacement.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. What's up, Tom?
Hi. Yeah, I've got an old HP printer. It's the model 882C. It's from year 2000. And I'm having trouble locating the device driver that runs it. I have the printer also used on another computer, and I wanted to copy the device driver from the old computer to the new computer.
No, you can't do that. If you still have the installer, you can copy the installer, but you can't just copy the driver. Because there is no one file. It's dozens of files scattered in
attachments,
folders.
Yeah. It buries itself on in, so it becomes a more or less a universal.
Okay. One of the things that you might find is that Windows will have a driver for that printer already. And so just plugging in the printer and telling Windows to add printer, it may find the driver for you.
Okay, so right now the printer is installed even on the new computer, and I think what you're saying, I should uninstall the printer and then have it reinstalled and search for the driver.
Well, if it's installed, then it would have already loaded the driver. Is it not printing?
It's not. Well, that's right. It's not working properly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You could go to HP, their website, support.hp.com.
They don't support that printer anymore. I went there, I searched for that model printer. They specifically say they don't support it anymore.
All right, one other thing you can do is in your list, you know how you go into the list of printers when you go to add a printer and you scan down, you might you select HP, and then over on the right-hand side it starts to show you all the printers it finds?
Right.
All right, underneath those two windows is printer not listed. And you can, I forget the verbiage, but you can click on it, and what it'll do is it'll go out there and look for more drivers and update the list.
Yeah.
Not available. No,
the driver's available at Microsoft. I just found it in the Microsoft Update catalog. From a tech support note on the the HP website. So let me post this. So they have drivers for Windows 7, 8, 8.1, and 10.
For this particular model?
The DeskJet 882C.
You saw that. Hmm? Can you put that on your link list up there?
Yep.
He's doing it as we speak.
That's great. Thank you.
Give it a minute. It'll show right up.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Which is interesting.
Good luck, Tom.
Yep. I would have expected Windows to load it itself. Yeah, you would think so. If it's part of the Microsoft Update catalog.
Or you should be able to click and say, if it's on their catalog, you should be able to say, search the web. There used to be at least a choice that said, you know, search for it on the web.
So, yeah, if it's already installed, you can do the update driver button in the properties.
Right.
And it should find it for you, or you can download it manually. Looks like the last update was December 2014.
Yeah. Well, he said it was from 2000, so they updated it 14 years later.
That's
so
pretty good, yeah. And it's still available for Windows 10, so all right.
There you
go.
That's
good.
Excellent. That's a good thing.
Let me hit the download button and see if it actually downloads.
Well, there's that.
It's a bunch of gibberish.cab. Okay.
That's good.
And it downloaded.
Excellent. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Hiya, James. What's up?
Yes, I was reading an article in the New York Times that did a survey of the best password managers. And they came up with one called 1Password. Are you familiar with that?
Yep. I have seen it, yes.
Yes. My question to you is, they analyzed like 15 of them. They wrote a long article on it. Which would be the easiest for me, being a simple person, to use with my laptop?
They're all pretty simple.
Yeah.
And pretty similar. And really
very similar. So the way they all seem to work these days is you install it and just start entering your information into that program.
When you're on a website and you type in a username and password, the little box will pop up and say, do you want to save this password?
Mm-hmm.
And you can say yes. And when you go back to that website, the box will pop up and say, do you want to enter this password? And
right.
You say yes.
In addition, some of them, like, for example, I use EnPass, and one of the things it lets me do is save the encrypted database automatically to my Google Drive, which means that I can use exactly the same database on my laptop, my desktop, my Chromebook, my phone, my tablet, every place.
Yeah, that's a good feature.
Right, and so... and it updates very quickly. So, for example, I have entered a password on my desktop, and then a couple of minutes later, I look it up on my phone. It's there.
Oh, wow.
PC Mag rates LastPass as the best for ease of use.
Right. Oh.
So they have best for cross-platform, best sharing features. So that's another one. So you want to let your wife into your bank account, you can share the password with them. And not have to type out crazy, you know, messages back and forth. Just share the password.
Right.
So between EnPass and LastPass, what would I be good for me?
Well, LastPass is considered to be the easiest to use. So go with that.
Well, I think that is she can download both and look at them.
Okay, use the free trials before.
Yeah, use the free trial. Test drive them, because you can always use Revo uninstalled, uninstall the one that you don't want. But you can look at the front ends of them just to see what's more comfortable for you.
I think I'm going to begin with LastPass.
Good idea.
Yeah, that'll work. Yeah.
Being that I don't have anything now, and you said the little box pops up where to save it, the Google box with the password manager currently...
Yeah, Chrome has a password manager built in.
Yeah, so do I have to do anything with that, or I don't know?
It'll still continue to work, so you'll really have you can have passwords in two places if you like.
There's an extension for Chrome for LastPass. So
that, same that, with EnPass. EnPass is the same thing.
All of them, probably.
Yeah, because EnPass now takes over the Chrome one for me, so it's put it right into EnPass.
Yeah, so if I go on the Chrome extension and use like the last pass, would that dominate over the Google stuff?
Yes.
Yep.
So just do that then.
That's probably best.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Have fun, James.
And PC Mag rates 1Password best at organization. So you want to organize all your passwords.
Right.
So there. You know, so the 11 different password managers they pick are all best at this one thing.
Right. Did they pick EnPass, and is it good at anything?
Oh, they didn't test NPass.
Yeah.
See, that's the other problem, is not all of the review sites will review all the programs.
Right.
But there's one in here I never heard of before called Sticky Password.
Oh, interesting. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Jim. What's up?
Hello. I use a thumb drive to transfer data from one laptop to the other.
Sure.
Is it really necessary to go through that safe to remove step? Or
yes.
No.
It is very necessary to use the safe to.
Yeah.
Let me explain clearly what happens there. I hope it'll be clear. When you copy something from one drive to another, Windows will come back and tell you you're done long before it's actually done. In order to make Windows seem faster than it is, it does that transfer in the background at its own leisure. So when it comes back and says it's done, it isn't. And so if you pull out the drive, not all the data may be written. Not only may the data not all be written, but the drive itself, the drive
directory.
Catalog, the directory will not be accurate.
And then you put the disk back in and it can't read it.
It can't do a thing with it. So when you say safely remove the drive, what it does is it makes sure all the data are written, makes sure the catalog is correctly updated, closes all that out, and then tells you, go ahead and take it out.
Okay.
So you do want to wait.
The other thing, I have USB. It's a multiple strip that I plug in different external hard drives.
Right.
And I just flip the switch on and off to locate each one. Is there something I should be doing that I'm not, or
Do not turn the power off before you use the safe to eject, because the same thing can happen. It's not just flash drives. It's hard drives. It's any drive this happens with.
Oh, wow. Jesus.
Yeah. It's not a problem for the internal drives because you don't ever disconnect them.
When you power down, they're disconnected.
When you power down, it does that exact same thing just in case and then powers down. That's why sometimes it takes a minute to power down.
Because they're parking the heads on the drive so that they're not going to cause damage.
Even if it's an SSD card.
Same thing.
You still have to write all those data, close out the cache, then disconnect the drive. And if you don't do that, you run the risk of destroying the data on that drive and never being able to recover it.
Wow.
And it's,
so are you telling me that I've been lucky so far?
Yes.
Yeah.
And people will say, I've never used that safe to eject until it fails. What's been happening teaches
the individual.
Computers have gotten fast enough that time delay between when it's says it's done and when it's really done has been shortened.
Yeah.
It used to be minutes.
Yeah.
Now it's probably seconds.
But still not. It could cause damage, and it's worth a few seconds then to damage, whether it's a thumb drive or a hard drive.
And the same thing on a Mac. There's an eject icon next to the disk. It calls it ejecting the disk.
Linux has an eject as well. Yeah. All right, listen, we got to that's loud. We got to take a quick break, I'm afraid. I think we're kind of done. Thank you very much. We're going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes, with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 33 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites.
Still.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. All right. This is early days. Don't get your self all bunched up, but here's what's going on right now. Google says the free ride is over for early users company's custom domain G Suite service.
We've been using it for 10 years.
So have I. Google has long offered the ability to use Google Apps on a custom domain, allowing you to have your Google email address that ends in your domain instead of gmail.com. For the first 6 years of the service's life, the basic tier allowed you to create a custom domain account for free.
We have 100 emails.
Yeah.
Because we started that long ago.
Yeah, exactly. Now you have to pay for the privilege of using a custom domain with a Google account. Google turned off the ability to create these accounts for free in 2012, but it wouldn't take away accounts from existing users, would it? Oh, it would. Absolutely. Google will shut down free G Suite accounts if the account holder doesn't transition to a paid account. Google is sending out emails to users of G Suite Legacy Free Edition accounts, telling them they have until July 1 to start paying. Starting May 1, Google will try to automatically upgrade users to a paid account if it is available, if it has the available billing information. If there is no such information by July, accounts will be suspended. After 60 days, those accounts will lose access to core Google services like Gmail and Calendar. Google's custom domain started in 2006 as Google Apps for Your Domain. This service has been through a bunch of name changes since then. Google Apps for Work, G Suite, now Google Workspace, but the setup has always been the same. You get Gmail and other Google apps, but they've been custom branded for your company or at least domain name, giving them a more professional appearance than a gmail.com email address. Today, the service starts at $6 per user, and you've got 100 users.
Well, we're only using like 20 of them, but
still, it's $6 per user per month,
which is sort of the going price.
It is. It's not exorbitant. Higher tiers, however, are available for higher storage needs. From 2006 to 2012, the basic tier was free. The billing section of admin.google.com will tell you what kind of G Suite account you have. These users did nothing wrong when they signed up for G Suite's basic tier years ago, so seeing Google pull the rug out from under them like this is rough. You trust Google and store all your data within the company, and you assume at least the basic terms of your account will be the same forever. Google is changing the deal for these people, though, and telling them they need to start paying or they'll lose their accounts. Google notes the customers can use Google Takeout to export some data, but if you don't want to pay, rebuilding an account under a consumer Google account is a lot of work. These were mostly fully functional Google accounts, and there's no way to export things like content purchases for books, movies, music, and apps. You'll probably also lose your Google Voice number. If you used your G Suite account like this, you don't have many choices other than to start paying. It would have been nice to see the company go the extra mile and offer users an easy way to port their data to a free consumer account with a new email address, but Google isn't doing that. If you're somehow unclear about the status of your Google Business account, you can try heading to the billing page of admin.google.com. You'll see a message about being on a G Suite legacy account. You can expect an email soon detailing how you will be hit by the change. If you got your Google Apps account through some kind of bundle service like a domain hosting site, you'll probably want to check with it. How's your Google account? Give us a call, assuming your Google Voice number still works. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
There is a pattern forming that Google stopped offering free photo storage last year. Now it's no free business email.
Well, they got to find ways of making money. I mean,
for the
stockholders.
Yeah, they've only got billions.
Yeah, for the time being, getting a gmail.com address is still free.
15 gigs.
15 gigs. I can see that happening in the future.
Yeah.
That's the one nice thing. So the G Suite Legacy is a 15 gig. And if you go to the starter business suite for the $6, it's 100 gig.
Right.
Our boss is at that 14.5 gig.
Yeah. I get it. At any rate, you may be seeing a change to your free Google account soon.
So you may want to go take a credit card number out of the billing services so they can't automatically upgrade you.
That's exactly right, which they will do as a courtesy.
Yeah.
Very nice of them. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Don from Pittsford, New York. Hiya, Don. What's up?
Regarding the topic just before the break, safely removing a jump drive from a computer, which I always try to do and wait until it says safe to remove. However, occasionally, when everything is shut down on that drive, I get a notice which says, drive or still under use, not, I assume, not safely removable. And that hangs there forever, even though I've shut down everything regarding that drive connected to the computer.
Mm-hmm. It's a background process, probably the indexer.
Yeah, right. And Windows had a brain fart.
And every now and then I'll run to that, and the only solution is shut the whole computer down. Then you can eject it and restart the computer.
Yep.
Yeah, pretty
or
much.
Risk ejecting it improperly and damaging the directory and never getting to the
I would safely shut the machine down, because then that will unmount stuff and park stuff. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I have, waited 5-6 minutes and then went ahead and removed the drive, which you say is not advisable.
No.
Sometimes, as Steve said, the indexer gets stuck.
Yep.
And if that happens,
you could corrupt all the data on that unit.
Right. So if you then shut down, it's a slightly different process and should work.
There is a setting, I just found an article on it, so you can turn off the write caching. So then you can unplug the drive anytime you want, but it makes writing to the drive slower.
Right, so you still have to wait for the write to finish.
Yeah.
But now, when Windows says it's finished, it really is finished.
Okay, well, shutting down the whole computer and restarting, removing the drive while it's shut down is your advice?
That's the safest way to do it, yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate the information.
Yep. Thank you. Yeah. People don't get that this is serious. Yeah. You can simply corrupt, scramble, destroy all the data on that thumb drive.
And so many people have done it wrong for so long without any consequences, as they get used to it and just ignore that message.
It's like shooting craps.
Yeah. And a lot of times you're just copying a file to a flash drive so you can give it to somebody else. Doesn't matter.
Right.
But if you are backing up your own data that you want to be able to get back again, it matters.
Right.
So you have the choice of the write caching, which makes it faster,
Well, faster conceptually in your head. Because if you're not waiting to remove the drive, you can move on to something else.
So they call it better performance, which enables write caching.
Right.
But then it's more dangerous to eject it.
Right.
Or quick removal, which disables caching.
Right.
And makes it slower.
Right. So now when it says it's done, it's really done. But it takes longer to be done.
Yep.
So it's the same amount of time in both cases.
Yeah. You don't see that background finishing up caching.
Right. So it's false. It's nonsense.
And it's so frustrating how many times I've plugged a customer's hard drive into my computer. Just, I want to check their backup date.
Right.
And then I go to eject it. I did nothing but open the window.
Right.
And it says in use. No.
Right.
No, it's not in
because
use.
It's being indexed. And,
yeah.
Yep. So all right.
So then I go into Spotlight and say, don't index this drive. And
right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Roger from Greece, New York. Hi, Roger. What's up?
Hi. I've got a desktop computer that is probably between like 6 and 10 years old. I'm starting to get some noise when it runs, which I'm guessing is like the hard drive. I'm thinking I'm due for a new computer. And I was calling to see what your suggestions are as far as like what capacity, speed I should be looking for.
What is it you do?
I'm sorry?
What is it that you do with your computer?
Okay, I was just going to tell you. Basically, I just go on the Internet. I go to different sites. I do my own word processing on there. But that's it. I do no games, nothing like that.
Okay, you can do anything from a Chromebook to a fairly inexpensive laptop to a fairly inexpensive desktop.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily need speed, so an i3 would be fine.
Especially if he's not into gaming.
But if you're going to keep it for another 10 years, you might want to go to a little bit higher end.
Yes. Depending on how long you intend to keep it or how your needs may change, an i5 would be a good middle ground. i7 would be high end.
Chromebook would be perfect if he's going to just, you know, word processing, if you don't mind using Google Docs.
Yeah, one thing to check is on your current drive capacity, see how much space you're using in your documents folder. And that will sort of lead you to how big a drive you need to get on the new computer. Almost all computers these days are coming with solid-state drives, which are a lot faster. But they're typically smaller at the lower end. An entry-level computer might have a 128 gig drive, which is enough for simple documents. But if you like doing a lot of photos, then you're probably going to need a bigger drive than that.
Okay. All right. I have a what do you call it? The keyboard is a ergonomic sure. keyboard. And I kind of like that, so I think I would want to stay with the desktop rather than going to one of the smaller mm-hmm. ones.
Yeah, get an i5.
Most desktops come with a cheap keyboard and mouse you can use as a backup.
Right. I have an ergonomic, and I've moved it from machine to machine.
Yeah. Yeah.
But definitely, you want to get at least 16 gig of memory. I mean, a lot of them now, you know, go like Steve said, maybe a terabyte hard drive. And a decent, not onboard, but a separate video card.
Especially if you like doing photos or you know, home video, you know, making your own videos.
Okay, I don't do videos, but I do have, you know, our photos in storage there.
So that would be a good, you know, basic middle of the road system that would do you for quite a few years.
Okay, very good. It'll probably last longer than I will.
And if you're not now, start backing up immediately, because if that hard drive goes, you're done.
Okay.
Okie doke. Right.
Just in case, yep.
Okay, I've got several of these, you know, stick-in...
flash drives.
Memory cards. How do I tell how much capacity I need to back it up?
If you right-click on the documents folder or the photos, the pictures folder, one of the choices would be properties, and then you look at the properties, and it'll tell you how much space it takes in the drive.
Okay, very good. Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, we've had several customers get caught by that smaller SSD when they're moving from a spinning drive, and they buy the cheapest computer and suddenly find out the drive's not big enough.
Right.
So your choice is an external drive or buy the next bigger computer.
Right, right. And there's so much more to a computer than just how big is the screen and do I like the keyboard, particularly these days. I get it. We all want to save money, but if you save money for something you can't use, what's the point?
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Peachy. How are you?
I'm peachy as well.
There you go.
I have a little solution that works for me when a drive doesn't want to unmount.
Okay.
You know, safely removed. What I do is if it doesn't want to, I just simply log out of the account.
Oh, log out versus shut down. That's faster.
Yeah. It's faster. Very, very clever.
And then I remove it, and then I log back in.
Nice. Good idea.
So, okay.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks, Mark.
Okay. Yep. Take it easy.
You too. Very clever idea, because logging out is faster than restarting.
It parks everything.
Yeah. Very nice.
That'll work.
But, yeah, you really have to be aware that... what happens behind the scenes in a program like Windows, well, in any operating system, it really doesn't matter, in every operating system, what happens behind the scenes can be dangerous if you're not careful, and in particular when it comes to writing data to any drive at all. That's why losing power is dangerous, because it may be writing to the drive when you lose power.
Yeah, and if it's writing an important bit,
that's exactly
right. It may not boot back up again.
That's exactly right. You imagine, for those of you who are old enough to remember them, you can imagine your hard drive like the turntable of a record player. There's the disc spins, the hard drive spins, and there's a tone arm that the reed had that goes across it. Well, when you lose power, that tone arm, that reed head, just starts to wander back to zero. The problem is it's going to cross all those tracks on the drive as it's parking to zero, and it writes by magnetism. And when you lose power, that magnetism doesn't shut off, it fades. So as it's going across the drive, it's like running a magnet over your hard drive. That's never good. And so you can understand that's the main reason people say get an uninterruptible power supply. Now, is that true of SSD cards? Yes and no. They don't have tone arms. They don't spin, but they still have to not only write all the data, but all of the housekeeping of those data, which is a lot in an SSD card. And then when they're done with all of that, they write the catalog back out, the directory back out, so that you can find that stuff again.
Yeah, the directory is where it put the file.
Right.
So if the directory gets corrupted, it can't find the file again. The file may be on there somewhere, but it just can't find it.
And the directory is the last thing it writes.
I used to use the example of a card catalog in the library.
Yeah.
If you tip over the cards, you're not going to find your books.
That's right.
Nobody goes to the library anymore. Nobody knows a card catalog anymore. I still do.
But for you, but for the geezers among us who remember card catalogs, imagine shelving a book, writing out the card, and then not putting it in the catalog because something interrupted you.
Yeah.
That book is safe on the shelf. Nobody's ever going to find it. So that's the idea behind making sure your drive writes. That's why people buy UPSs. That's why you don't just pull out a drive. It is a very dangerous thing to do. And if you've been lucky, go buy a lottery ticket. But honest, you're going to be bitten one of these days.
At the worst possible moment. It's like the Murphy's Law of computers. Everything will work fine when it doesn't need to, but as soon as it really needs to, it'll break.
That's exactly right.
Like we've always said, it's going to happen. You just don't know when.
We're coming up on tax season, so we get computers all the time. I got to finish my taxes. I got to finish more taxes. So where's your backup?
And the reality is be aware of what you're backing up. Check your backups. You've told us the story of people who backed up the
shortcut.
The shortcut.
Yeah.
And never backed up the actual data. So be aware of what you're backing up, where it is, where you're putting it, and how big that backup is.
Or they put the backup on a partition
Inside the machine.
Say you got a 1 terabyte hard drive and they broke it up into two partitions. Well, I backed it up to the D partition, and the hard drive crashes. Everything's gone. It
doesn't help when the whole drive dies.
That's exactly right.
It has to be one different physical drive or separate space.
And better yet, outside the computer.
Mm-hmm.
A number of us, Dave included, backs up to a drive connected to a Raspberry Pi, a different computer over the network. I do the same thing as one of my backups. I also back up to the web. You don't have enough backups. I don't care how many you've got. You don't have enough.
Yeah, I do a Raspberry Pi and a Buffalo drive.
Yep. And that way you've got multiple copies out there on the web. If one dies, the others are good. And when you back them up over the web like that, again, they happen in the background. And so you don't see that they're not done yet. You watch the little thing go in the little... The piece of paper wafts across to the other folder, and that's all great. But actually, in the background, even when that finishes, that drive may not have been fully written to yet. That's why you don't disconnect it. You don't turn off the other machine. You don't turn off your machine. You let it go for a while, and then you shut down correctly, and that will make sure that all the buffers are flushed, all the data are correctly written, and everything is kosher before it shuts down.
That's one thing I got to admit. You know, as I just got a new computer less than a month ago. And that was the easiest switch for me because, you know, it booted on up and that. But all I had to do was sign into my Google account. I didn't have to worry about photos. All my documents and everything else is done in Google Docs. Nothing there on the hard drive. So the only thing I had to do is reload the programs, which you would have to do anyways in getting a new computer and installing and setting those up.
And that also means you don't need as big a local storage drive because you're storing everything in the cloud. Yeah. Although, as my wife always points out, someday the cloud's going to be gone.
That's why you have multiple backups. Yeah,
if your internet doesn't work, you can't get to the cloud.
That's why you have multiple backups. Mm-hmm.
Or the way Google's going, they're going to lower that 15 gigs of free storage and raise it up, raise the price significantly.
Yeah, I think so too. The reality here is that you, how do I put this politely?
You
have to decide how much you care about your data.
Yeah.
If you don't care,
can you live without it?
Right. If you don't care about the pictures of your grandparents.
Would you cry? We ask, would you cry if you lost everything on your drive?
Right.
Yeah.
Why would I do that? Because things break.
Especially documents. Yeah, I could see, you know, if you lose those, you could recreate those. But the key thing I always try to stress to folks is the photos. Those you cannot recreate. You know, if you had grandparents and there was old photos of those, once that drive crashes, 10 to 1 odds, it's gone. So are all those memories. So if you can live without them, then don't worry about backing up. That would be my advice. But you know what? You're sure as heck going to kick yourself in the butt because all of a sudden, oh, wait a minute, I had that film. Oh, that's right. I didn't back it up. I lost it.
You can always have another kid.
Right. Yeah. And here's the other thing. A new thumb drive is cheap. Even the giant ones are cheap nowadays.
Well, even SSD drives are so dirt cheap right now.
Particularly compared to paying somebody to retrieve your data.
Commercial recovery services generally start at $1,000.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Do you know how many thumb drives you can buy for $1,000?
And that's not even guaranteeing that they're going to be able to get all the data back.
That's exactly right.
It could get so jumbled that it's beyond recovery. They'll try. They'll still take your $1,000 for trying, but they don't guarantee that they're going to get it back. All they're going to do is guarantee that they're going to give it their best effort and recovering all the data that they can.
We had one customer who had a RAID drive, his business server, and one of the drives failed. And he's thinking, oh, it's okay, it's RAID. Right. He didn't get it fixed. Then the second drive failed.
Uh-huh.
Everything's gone.
Uh-huh.
So we call up Drive Savers. What is it to recover data from a failed RAID drive? Started at $5,000.
Yeah. Yep.
Hello,
and,
Buffalo.
And you can buy a 1 terabyte SSD for $80.
And you don't even need an SSD for backup because you don't care how fast it is.
Right.
So probably a 2 terabyte spinning drive is $80.
Yeah. $80. That's right. On my Raspberry Pi, I've got a 2 terabyte spinning drive. I don't care how long it takes to write to that.
Nope. Yeah, it's only backup.
I simply don't care.
And it does it at night when I'm not using the computer anyway.
That's why I don't care.
Yeah.
Although you're up all night on your computer, so it does it during the day when you're not using the computer.
I'm usually in bed by 4 a.m., which is when my thing kicks off, and it's done by 6, which is long before I get up. So, that's how that works for me. All right. That music tells us that we are done for another week. We took a bucket load of calls today. Thanks to everybody who called in. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You spent 2 hours of your life listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and truly grateful to you. We are, as you know, member supported. That means if you don't support us, we don't exist. We're a couple of months out from the next pledge drive. We'd love to have you join us. If you're not a member or renew or increase your membership or just, send us money. That's really what we're looking for here. That'll be happening pretty soon. Until then, of course, We'll be back next week with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.